Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
So then we get to the point where you come and start seeing me, and you came both individually, and we also had sessions with your ex-wife as well. We had marital and individual sessions that we were working. And I believe, and I'd like to hear your perspective on this, because this is 10 years ago, I think, 11 years ago that this happened. I believe and I hope that I was very upfront with you that this was not an area of expertise for me.
Yes.
And that I would be more than willing to work with you guys as long as you understood that, and as long as you understood that we were kind of going on a quest together.
Yes.
You know, to see what in the heck is out there and what can we do about this, and are there, you know, remedies or treatments or whatever. Because, of course, my training did not cover anything along the lines of reparative therapy, which is what they call therapy, which tries to change the homosexual drive, or I guess template, sexual arousal template, to one that is heterosexual. So I had not had any training in that in my professional training. And I also knew that many therapists and much of the psychology field feels that this is even an ethical practice to try to do this.
Yes.
So I believe I was very upfront about all that.
Absolutely.
And we kind of went from there.
Yes. And I have to tell you, and I have to tell your audience, that you were the best.
Oh, that's, you're very kind. I was very inexperienced at that time, I believe.
You were inexperienced, but you treated us with dignity, and you gave us the tools that we needed to do what we needed to do. I think that I remember that when your husband was transferred from the town that we used to live in, and you moved, and we had to look for another therapist, and we didn't find another one. And I was still married to my wife back then. And then I remember that we would go for walks, and she knew that something was wrong with me, and she would ask me, what do you think is our future? Do you think that we're going to last? Do you think that we're going to be? And I would say, I don't know. And finally, one day I said, I'm very thankful to Sister Parker, because thanks to her, I understand and I understood that I am not a heterosexual man that is experiencing with something new. I'm not a bisexual man that is attracted to women and can be attracted to men. I am a complete homosexual man, and I am not going to change. And that was basically, you know, the realization that is very easy sometimes, and I have to say this, when people out there say that homosexuality is a choice, and every time people ask me, tell me that is it a choice, I ask them, are you heterosexual? And they say, oh, yes, I am. And I say, when did you choose to be heterosexual?
Right.
You don't choose to be one or the other. You know, and so it is what it is.
So the first thing I remember doing after that first session with you guys is desperately starting the research cycle, right?
Yes.
And so I, of course, I called LDS Family Services. I was contracting with them at that time, you know, to ask them what, you know, what kind of resources they had available, what thoughts they had. I had a very good social worker who was kind of my, I guess, I don't know if he was my boss, because again, I was contracting with them, but he was definitely my superior, I guess. And he gave me all the material. At the same time, I think he was very honest and forthcoming about, you know, that this is something that's very difficult to work with. This is, you know, you shouldn't just expect miracles, and that, you know, this is, you know, just something, here's some resources, but, you know, don't get your mindset that one thing is going to happen or another. So I felt like he had a very kind of good and neutral position that, that mm-hmm. helped me. I went, of course, on the internet and tried to find out about, you know, whatever there was about reparative therapy. I never was able to find completely concluding evidence that this was, you know, a positive or good prognosis venture that we were on. There are, I guess, there were individual stories out there of people that claimed that they had been able to change their sexual template and were having, you know, heterosexual satisfying sex now after having had homosexual experiences. But I guess the first place we started was with this book that is actually put out by the church. I'm assuming, well, maybe not by the church, but definitely available through church resources, called Resolving Homosexual Problems, A Guide for LDS Men. It's by Jason Park. And we kind of delved into this book together.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, there were a lot of different reasons as to why maybe people become homosexual, or yes, at least men. I think most of this research is done on men. And this book is about men. It's not about lesbians. So one of the things, and as we went through kind of this list, we found out that, you know, a lot of these things seem to apply to you.
Yes.
There was the idea of a father figure who was maybe distant or not very affectionate or, you know, loving. And as you have already very well described, your relationship mm-hmm. with your father kind of fell along those lines. There was a relationship with a mother who is maybe because because she's reacting to the father, she becomes maybe over-involved or over-emotional or very protective or,
yes,
you know, and you kind of had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's the effeminate traits that some men seem to have from an early age. And then along with that, as you've described, the teasing and the being made fun of and not ever really fitting in with their peers. Mm-hmm. Kind of idea. And then even possibility of previous sexual abuse, which we haven't really talked about, but if I remember correctly, you had had some experience with that as well.
Yes, I did.
From an older person or something. It wasn't family related, but it was somebody definitely inappropriate when you were a young boy.
Yes, I was around 10 years old.
Okay. So as we're reading through this, I think we both were like, well, holy crap, you know, you're kind of meeting all these different, you know, things. And what are your thoughts about that now? Because I know that since then, as I've seen many other men in this similar position, it's not as clear cut as it seemed to be with you, that there were many people that I've seen that have never been sexually abused or that describe pretty normal relationships with their parents or,
yes,
you know, so what are your thoughts about this kind of stuff that we were looking into and finding out about together?
Well, my thought right now is that in my life at this point, or in any case, it is irrelevant. In my point of view, if it's because something happened or because something didn't happen or because you were born that way or because you were not born that way, I mean, there are I have talked to men where they said, you know, when I was 3 or 4 years old, I tend to play with dolls. Or I wanted to wear dresses instead of boys' clothes. How can you explain that? The point is that regardless if it's one or the other, why that has to be an issue when it's already happening, when it's already there? Do you think that going back, and we try to do that. I remember that in our therapy sessions, we went through a histogram of my life and how was everything and what happened to me. And, you know, for me to come and say, well, now I understand why I am a homosexual. Now, let's for a moment assume that I am a homosexual because my father was a certain way or was not a certain way. Mm-hmm. Or because I was abused, or why I was not abused. Does it matter?
Because you're still dealing with the same issue.
Well, because I am who I am.
Right.
I am who I am, regardless of what happened or what didn't happen, or if I was born that way or if I was not born that way. You know. There was not, I didn't, you know, you can say, well, you know, he grew up with sisters and he got the female, the feminine traits from his sister. No, my father was very masculine. And I always looked up to him. I mean, there was not, and I think I was sexually abused when I was around 10 years old, but I was feminine when I was very young.
Right.
You know, how can you say, well, this 5-year-old boy is feminine and this 5-year-old is masculine? Why? I mean, that is, people are trying to look for reasons. Nobody's looking for reasons why you are heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
You are who you are.
So trying to explain it away somehow that's going to
take it away. Trying to explain it is gonna take it away.
Right. Which obviously we found out not to be the case.
Exactly.
And we explained it away quite a bit.
Yeah. I don't think in many ways that, because there is other men out there that may have grown up in situations that may have been worse than mine, that may have been sexually abused, that they may not even have had a father in many ways, and they're straight. How do you explain that?
Right. In fact, probably more so. There's probably more men that have had all these issues and are straight than homosexuals, just from the numbers perspective. Because if we're talking about 5 to 10% of people are homosexual, there's a lot more than that that have distant fathers or who've had sexual abuse in their past or who have over-involved mothers.
Exactly, and they are not homosexual. How do you explain that, Nan?
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, for me, I had to deal with that a lot. And I came to a conclusion that in my life, it doesn't matter. I am who I am.
So then we kind of went along the path, if I remember correctly, of just kind of testing to see if we could, you know, shift your desire. And I think we did some imagery stuff, you know, where we would kind of have you just close your eyes and imagine yourself with your wife, or, you know, kind of fantasy type work. Mm-hmm. And not even I mean, just we're talking about like walking along the beach together, you know, just things that couples do together and kind of to see if that would cause any type of arousal. We did things such as, you know, writing letters to your father, that we did a lot of things, I think, kind of just working towards, well, first, your own personal healing from some of the traumatic events that you had had as a child and as an adolescent.
Yes.
But also towards this idea of maybe if we, you know, try at least to look at this desire template in your brain, that maybe just like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, if you think about something differently or if you reframe something, maybe there's a possibility that you can start integrating that into your everyday life. Can you tell me about what that was like or what you thought about that as we were doing that type of work? Or, and well, I'm perfectly fine with you saying it was a bunch of crap.
For me was there were two things that I found out about myself. First, it was very frustrating to think that I would think about a female and not have any kind of arousal at all. And say, well, you know, why? And the second thing is that I realized that it is what it is. And I cannot come and say, well, I'm going to like black beans tomorrow, even though I didn't like them today. The taste of the black beans is gonna be there regardless of how much I think that they're gonna be something else. What I mean is that is not. My personal belief is that there is a range of attraction in one way or another, and there are people out there that are completely heterosexual, and there is a range that goes from there to people that are completely homosexual. That people that are in both extremes, it doesn't matter what you try to do. They are not going to develop any kind of desire that is going to be different from what they are. But there are other people out there that are in between.
Maybe more bisexual, for instance. Or
yes. Some people that can be attracted to one or attracted to another and attracted to both. And in that case, I think that with therapy, you are able to guide yourself to be more integrated to one or the other.
Especially if you're in a marriage and wanting to make that work, you could possibly have more success staying in a marriage.
Exactly.
And having some type of intimate lifestyle with that partner that you have.
Because I have met friends that are living a gay life, and they said, you know, I have a very good friend of mine that he said, I was very attracted to my wife and I was married for 25 years and we had fantastic sex. But that's not what he is doing right now. He is a homosexual man right now, even though he was attracted to his wife. But in his case, and because I have talked to him about that, he said, I was not attracted to any woman. I was attracted to my wife.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that. And I remember you telling me, this was years later, when we had a conversation, that was hard for you to understand because you felt like if that had been your case, you would have never chosen to leave your wife.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I was hoping, because I didn't know what I was going to face when I said I'm going to go to therapy. I was hoping that one way or another there was some way that I would find attraction, sexual attraction to women. You know, and right now, and I can tell you, I am one of those, and I always joke about it, that I say, well, if you are, you know, one, you are completely heterosexual, and 10, you're completely attracted to men, I am 12.
Hmm. Right. So another thing that we discussed was this idea of building positive and healthy relationships with other men. I remember that was one of the suggestions in this book, which you did. I think
Yes.
You joined some type of quartet or something to do with singing that was all men, like an all men's choir, and you did several other things. And then as part of that as well, you also got in touch, I believe, with the Evergreen Association.
I got in touch with the Broken Yokes.
Broken Yokes.
Yes.
Wasn't it Evergreen who directed you to Broken Yokes? Because
no, you did.
Oh, I did. Okay.
Yes, you did.
Okay, so that was maybe because I had called, and those were the resources they gave me. I don't believe Evergreen had a group in our area.
No, they
geographically,
didn't.
Right. So Broken Yokes was, can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what that was like and what Broken Yokes even is?
Broken Yokes is an organization, a Christian organization that helps basically men who are dealing with same-sex attraction and help them deal with it. And in many ways, and I went there for, I don't know, maybe a year and a half or something like that. And one of the things that I found is that even though it was a good group, they care for each other, and I believe that they loved each other. It was very frustrating. Because I never saw anybody who said, I am cured, I'm completely heterosexual now. And the ones who were there, it was a constant struggle. You know, sometimes you would get there and say, where is Mike? Well, Mike, he's in jail because they found him in a park last night, cruising for men. And this specific man has been a guy that has been in the group for 15 years.
Right.
And still, after 15 years, he's cruising parks and he's looking for men. And, you know, and it's like, well, where is the benefit? Where is the, after 15 years, this guy is still, you know, doing what he's doing and feeling remorse about it. And I didn't see the benefit of it. And I also have to say that during that time, the leader of the group knew that I was LDS. And one time he came to me and said, I had a phone call. In order to be a member of the group, you have to call the leader of the group and he would have a phone interview with you to be sure that you wanted to join the group for the right reasons. And then if he thought that you had the right reasons, he said, well, here's the address, here's the location, and here's the times and the days that we meet. You're more than welcome to join us. Well, one time he had a phone call from somebody who was LDS. And remember that the next time that we met, my leader came to me and said, Marcos, I had a phone call yesterday from somebody who is a member of your church, and he wanted to join our group. But as soon as I told him that there was a member of your church coming to the group, he said that he didn't want to come because he didn't want anybody to know in your church that he was dealing with this. So whoever he was never showed up.
Wow.
Never showed up.
So even the possibility that somebody else would know, even though that person was dealing with the same things, that was too much. It was too much of a risk.
Yes.
And I need to say too that I believe at that time we were living in a bi, if not tri-state area, so there's a good probability that you wouldn't have known each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about somebody from the same ward.
No, and most likely that person was not from the same state either.
Right.
But the fear to know there was a member of the church there, and he would be there as well. He said, "No, I cannot do that."
Yeah, that's really telling.
Yes.
So, so this group setting then wasn't what you had hoped for. I remember you going to a rally of some sort. Now, this was not necessarily, or maybe it was, about homosexuality, but it was like a Christian men's organization type of big conference or big get together. Oh, yes. Do you remember what that was?
What is the name of that? I don't remember exactly the name of that, but we went into a stadium and it was a great feeling. I came out of that, like, I felt like a million bucks. I can
was
tell
it,
you.
Was it just for homosexual men, or was it just for Christian men in general, or?
It was for Christian men that wanted to live a committed life with their wives.
Okay.
It was very uplifting. It was very much, very uplifting.
I remember you being very positive about that experience. And it was at that time that I remember also soon after that you kind of were very clear in our work together that you were committed to staying in your marriage and in working this out. And I will say that after that, there were probably some red flags that came up for me that I don't think I called you on, but that I wondered later if you were being completely honest with me. One in particular was you seemed all of a sudden to become almost homophobic, or like you would say things like, "I can't believe the things that homosexuals do," or that it was very ugly or dirty to you. And I was struggling to understand where that was coming from, since those were the things that you had done or that you felt felt a desire to do. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Because you want to believe. I wanted to believe, and I wanted to, you know, what, like they do in the Christian shows where the leader comes and hits you on the head and
right.
says you're healed.
Right.
You know, I was hoping for that.
Maybe I was hoping for that too. Maybe that's why I didn't call you on it. I don't know. I just remember thinking that was strange. And then later, you know, with things as how they evolved, I wondered if, if I was becoming a place too where you had to lead a double life.
Well, I remember that during our sessions, I had a fall down. You remember that?
Yes.
Yes, and you told me that I had to tell my ex-wife, and we invite her to come, and she came, and we talked to her, and she said, "I understand," but she said, "If it happens again, that's it." And I understood where she was coming from, but after that point, I got scared to death.
It became unsafe again.
Yes. I said, "What I will do? What can I do to protect myself?" I mean, and And you know, you cannot put yourself in a crystal ball or in four walls with no TV, no radio, no nothing, so you don't have influence of anything else. Because even when you do that, your thoughts, your dreams are still going to be there.
Yeah, so my training as a marriage and family therapist is quite strongly opposed to keeping secrets between spouses, you know, and that's some of the work that we were doing as well was just your ability to be honest with yourself, with, you know, the people in your life, with your church, and that honesty was somehow going to set you free. Maybe not necessarily of homosexuality, but it was going to set you free. Mm-hmm. And so looking back on that, would you have wanted me to do that differently? Maybe I shouldn't have encouraged you to tell your wife.
Which you did. You encouraged me to tell my wife.
I know I did. So I'm saying, should I not have done that maybe? What are your thoughts about that?
No, because I believe that there has to be honesty in a relationship, especially in those cases, and there has to be a communication. And you know, it is very one of the things that I have always been compassionate all my life, but after I went through what I went, I became 100 times more compassionate and understanding from other people. In not only not for being a homosexual, but you know, people who deal with drug addictions, people who deal with other kind of things that they don't like in their lives. It's very easy for me as somebody who is not a drug addict to be judgmental and say, well, why don't you stop what you're doing?
Right.
Or why don't you do something about it? Why do you have to keep taking that drug? Why do you have to, when you know it's not good for you? And when you know that, well, it's very easy for me to say, don't do it when I'm not dealing with that. Nobody understands the struggles that anybody goes through. Unless they have gone through that. Remember when I told you about me when I was very upset with God?
Yes.
And I would kneel down and say, why? Why do you have to give me this? Why couldn't I get anything else? And
I remember you saying that many times in sessions. I would take any other struggle.
Yeah, I would say I would take anything else, but don't give me this. Why me? Why did I have to do this? Why did I have to have this when I have a wonderful wife, when I have a wonderful family? Why couldn't I have anything else? And I remember that your little girl, your first daughter, was maybe 2 or 3 years old back then. And I remember that you could not be in one of the sessions because you had to take her to the doctor. She had some issues with her nodules.
Yeah, her lymph nodes.
Mm-hmm. His lymph nodes were big, and there was the suspicion, or there was the possibility that it would have been cancer. And when you told me that, and I realized that I would have taken anything than having to be in your situation. and having to have to deal with that with my child. And then I said, I take back what I said. I didn't mean what I said. I'm okay with this, and I'll be okay. I knew at that point, Sister Parker, at that point, I knew that I was going to be okay.
That's really, well, that's very emotional even for me to go back there. Just to clarify, I guess it was, everything worked out fine with for me, you know.
Yes.
My daughter's test results came back negative, and it was probably 2 weeks from hell for our family. But like you, it gave me maybe a new idea of what many people, you know, do have to go through.
Exactly.
And that there are many people that were in that situation like I was and had different results read to them. And what that would be like. So, yeah, it's very, very powerful stuff, the stuff we go through, huh?
Yes, and I, at that point, I knew I was going to be okay. I knew I was going to be okay.
And your anger with God, what happened to that?
It went away. It went immediately away because I said, you know what? I'm okay with this. I can handle this. I can live happily with who I am. And after that point, it took me a while to be happy with who I am. And I have to tell you that I am very happy to be a gay man. I'm very happy to be who I am. I don't have any regrets. I don't have... it's not easy. It's never easy. It's never, you always have to watch yourself, what you do and where you do it and things like that. And, but, you know, one of the things that many people do not understand is that being gay or being straight is not what really makes the person. It's your values, your principles, how caring you are, how loving you are, how understanding you are, and I'm grateful that I am a gay man, because being a gay man has given me the tools to be much more understanding, much more loving, much more caring, in many situations in my life right now.
Wow. Okay, well, so totally switching gears here. Tell me about your excommunication.
Which one? The first or the second?
Let's talk about the first one.
Well, the first one, I came out to my bishop, and I came out, and then he, because I was in a high stake calling, I had to go to my stake president, and I went to
a disciplinary council?
A disciplinary council. And I have to say that through the whole time that I was in the church, nobody in the church treated me with disrespect. Nobody in the church treated me with disregard. I always felt loved and appreciated. The stake president that I had at that time, that man, I'm sure that he is going to go to the highest level of the celestial kingdom, no doubt in my life, in my mind.
Yeah, he was a pretty special man.
He was an amazing, amazing man. And he showed me so much love and respect and understanding. I could not ask for better. But during the time when I went through my disciplinary council that day, my bishop sat next to me in the disciplinary council. And
who was also, I think, an extraordinary man.
Yes, absolutely. And you know that they have six men that are watching for your interest, and six men that are watching for the interest of the church, that they are not, you know, that they are not, you are not being disrespected or anything like that. And then there is the stake presidency. And I remember that I was very straightforward and very honest and very open about my feelings back then, because I said, you know what, I don't have anything to lose. I have to say what I feel. And I told them that I was capable of loving another man. And I remember that one of the members that was were sitting in one in the on the table said, "Well, I love brother such and such," and he pointed to one of the brethren across the table, and he said, "But I would never, I love him like my brother, and any other feeling that I could have more than that is not a feeling coming from God." And I looked at him and I said, "I respect what you say, but I can tell you right now, and I'm looking at you in your eyes, I don't believe that if I choose to love, respect, and honor another man, I don't believe that God will not love me the same way that he loves you."
Wow. And the decision was made to excommunicate you.
Yes, and I was excommunicated. And I kept going to church, and I remember that my family had to move from one ward to another. And of course, my new bishop had to be told of my situation. And in back then, he had a reputation of being a rough, tough, kind of dry kind of bishop. And, you know, everybody was saying, "Oh my gosh, you guys are going to that ward and that bishop." So when we got to that ward, I think that the second or the third Sunday, and the bishop called me to his office. The bishop about that ward, after we got there the second or third Sunday, he called me into his office and he said, "Your family being new to my ward, I had to be told of your situation. What I want you to know," and he said, he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, "If anybody in my ward treats you with disrespect, if anybody in my ward doesn't treat you with kindness and love, you need to come and tell me right away."
Wow. So these men rallied around you.
Oh, yes.
These leaders of yours.
Of course, all of them. And all of them were very supportive. My home teachers were fantastic. I couldn't ask for better home teachers.
Did your home teachers know about the situation?
Oh, yes. In fact, one of my home teachers' brother was gay, and he passed away from HIV. And one time, we were talking and we went for a walk, and he said, I'm so sad that I didn't meet you before. And he said, and I said, why? He said, well, because if I would have known you a few years ago, I would have been different with my brother. So, no, I don't have any regrets about the church and how they handle the situation. I don't have any regrets from the leaders of the church. I don't have anything to say but wonderful things about the leaders. They were wonderful to me.
And were you comfortable with the amount of confidentiality or anonymity that you received? Like, for instance, you know, now your home teachers knew, or were you worried about how many people were going to know about this very personal thing that was going on?
Oh, yes. No, I didn't have any worries at all. It was handled in a very confidential way. One of the things that was kind of one of the things that is very uncomfortable, and is not related to being homosexual or not, is one of the things that is very uncomfortable for somebody who is excommunicating the church, and they expect you to keep going to church, is that because it is kept in a way of not everybody knowing, well, you don't have the right to give a prayer, and you don't have the right to certain things when you are excommunicated. And if you go to Sunday school, for instance, the Sunday school teacher most likely doesn't know your situation.
Right.
And he can come and say, Brother such and such, would you give us the opening prayer? And you'll have to say, I'm sorry, I can't. In front of everybody.
Which all of a sudden makes your very personal private affairs more public.
Yes, and then people say,
Why would that be the case?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is something. So in many ways, you know, it's uncomfortable for somebody that wants to go back to the church and wants, because they say, well, you want to go back and you're going to be rebaptized. You need to go back and you need to show that you are attending the church, and you need to be involved and to the limit amount that you can. But on the other side, you are always worried. When do I have to say I cannot do this or I cannot do that? Or, you know, it's uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable.
Right.
It's very uncomfortable.
Well, so then moving ahead, you had mentioned that, you know, my family relocated and your family relocated, so we were no longer, you know, in a therapeutic relationship. But I received a phone call from you, I'm guessing about a year after we stopped working together. You were very kind and wanted to update me and tell me that you were getting rebaptized.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So can you tell me about that?
Well, I went through the whole process and, you know, I said, you know what, I'm going to stay in the church. I'm going to do whatever it takes, you know, because I love my wife and I love my kids, and I said, and I love the church, and I still do love the church. And I went through the process and I was rebaptized again. And it was a great feeling. It was a great feeling to be rebaptized again. But
yeah, you were very emotional about it with me on the phone, I remember.
Yes.
I was very emotional. We were all emotional, I guess.
But, you know,
a second fallout came, I'm assuming.
Yes, a second fallout came, and at that time, well, after that, I went through the process and I said, you know what? I cannot live I cannot live a life worried and scared when it's going to happen. When I'm going to, I cannot be strong 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Nobody can. Not even our Savior was strong because he was tempted by the devil. So I realized that there was no way I could live the life that was expected of me and be married and respect my wife the way she deserved. So we decided to get divorced, and I decided to live my life as a gay man.
So was there, had you fallen into another betrayal, or did you just make this decision kind of more intellectually, or were you guys dealing with, you know, again, other things that you had done, or are you even comfortable talking about that?
I got to the point where I started falling into again having sex with men again, and I said, I cannot do this again. I cannot go through the process again. I cannot. This is not. I won't be able to do this anymore. So I told my wife. Well, when we decided to get divorced, I was not. I knew that it would be a matter of time, and I told her. I said, I cannot live my life. I know that I cannot live my life. What if this happens? Because it's going to be a matter of time until it happens. I knew that. And I said, I'm not going to wait until that happens again. So we decided to get divorced. I remember that we were laying in bed and we were talking, and we talked and we decided that we were going to get divorced. And I remember that we cried and we hugged each other all night. But I knew that it had to be done.
It just feels like we all were aware at some level of what a tragedy this was. It was just a tragedy for the two of you, and I don't know. That's when I got the third phone call.
Oh, yes. And we asked you to help us to get divorced, and you said, I'll help you.
Can you talk about that process?
Well, it was very painful. It was very, very painful because... part of me wanted to be married and wanted to, you know, in many ways I had everything. I had a beautiful wife. I had beautiful kids. I had a woman who was willing to stand by me when I came out to her and I told her that I was gay. She said, it is okay. I'm willing to stay with you if you want to stay with me. And at that time, at the beginning, when I came out, I wanted to. But I realized after therapy, after going through the whole process, that I would not have been, I was not able to live a life with her, knowing that I would be able to respect her and
be faithful to her.
And be faithful to her. I knew that it was going to be a matter of time, and I didn't want to go through that again.
So can you tell me what the divorce process was like? How did you approach your children? How did you, decide to make this work and now a co-parenting way instead of in a marital way?
Well, the first, I never, I had to tell my kids that there were some things that I needed to work on. In my thought process, I said, it's going to be hard enough for them to know that mom and dad are going to get divorced. For me to come and give them a double whammy and say, well, we're going to get divorced and dad is gay. So I said, I need to work in some issues. I need to work in some things. And I need to do it alone. And mom and dad love each other, but we cannot be with each other anymore. So we have to get divorced.
And you told them this together? The two of you were in the room?
Yes. We told them together. And when I came out to them, maybe a year later less than a year later, we did it together. Two.
And are you pleased with the result of that, that you waited to, like you said, you didn't want to give them a double whammy, that you kind of had two different times that you sat down with your children?
Yes. I'm glad I did it that way, because I think that it's traumatic enough for children to know that mom and dad are not going to be living together. Is one thing that is bad enough. And then it would have been double hard for them to know, as members of the church, of the LDS church, to know that they had a father that was gay.
And how did they respond to both of these? To both of these talks?
Well, the first one, it was kind of hard, and I told them that I was going to move out, and my ex-wife advised me that, you advised me that it would be good if they helped me find a place to live, and they helped me decorate the new place, and things like that, so they knew where I was going to be living, and we did that. And at the beginning, it was hard. It was hard for both of them. My son, I have a son and a daughter, and my son is very reserved, and he didn't talk that much about it. My daughter, I remember that she came to me before I left, and she said, I want you to leave me your pillow. Because it smells like you, so I can sleep with it. So that was not easy for them, especially when they didn't see much of a fight. my ex-wife and I got along really well. We never fought. We never screamed at each other. We never, you know. So for them, it was hard to understand that.
Like, here, our parents seem to get along really well, and we seem to have this great family, and why are they doing this?
Yes. So I had to tell them I have some things that I need to work with. And at the beginning, I remember that they were the bad thing about it is that they thought that I had a terminal illness. And I had to tell them or reassure them, and my ex-wife had to tell them, reassure them that it was not anything like that. That was, didn't have to worry about it. That I had some emotional things that I had to work with, that that was why.
And they were how old at this time about?
We're talking. I think that my son was 12 and my daughter was 9.
Yeah, because you guys had worked on this for about 3 or 4 years before coming to this decision.
Yeah, I think we worked with it like for 3 years or so. Yeah.
And as they've grown older, have you had more discussions with them, or have they shown anger or emotion, or or is it?
No. And I have to say this. One of the things that I think it's not good. If I could go back and change anything in my life, if is not to live a life so centered in the Mormon Church, because the Mormon Church is not a church, is a way of life. The problem with that is that you don't relate, you don't get acquainted with other people that may be different than you. We didn't have any friends that were gay. We didn't have any friends that were Muslim. We didn't even have any friends that were Buddhist. We didn't have any friends that were anything like that. 99% of our friends were LDS.
And all of a sudden, you don't fit into that structure.
Exactly. You know, so for them, they are not used to say to see anybody who was gay, because they never related to anybody who was gay.
What was that talk like with your kids when you told them that you were gay? What did you say?
Well, my ex-wife and I sat down beforehand and we rehearsed what I was going to tell them.
So that she would be comfortable with your language, or that so the two of you would know?
That we would know, we would tell them in a way that we both would be comfortable with. And if I recall correctly, I said something that, well, you know, we started bringing my past about with my father and things like that. And I said, you know, I was different and I had known that I was different and I've been different for a long time. I finally told them that I was attracted to men and that I was gay. At that time, my son started crying and he ran out of the room. And my daughter started crying, but I think that she started crying because her older brother was crying. I don't think she understood that well.
So your son had a definite reaction.
Oh yes.
To this information.
Yes. And he had a definite reaction that lasted for 2 or 3 years.
In the sense of being angry with you, or being
being angry with me. And he wouldn't talk about it that much, but he one time told my ex-wife that my dad left the family for sex.
And what do you say to that?
It's completely false.
Because I think a lot of people in the LDS church would say that, not just your son.
Exactly. And they do not understand that homosexuality, you're not a heterosexual because you have sex with, you are attracted to the opposite sex. Is the whole intimacy thing. It encompasses all the things that can a relationship encompass. Sex is one of them. But it is a complete feeling. You feel complete with somebody. And if you're heterosexual, you feel complete with somebody of the opposite sex, the same way that a homosexual person feels complete with somebody of the same sex.
So if there's anything you'd want your children to know, would be this, that you did not choose sex over your family.
No.
That it was much more complicated than that.
Absolutely. But I can tell you that I believe that if my children would have been more associated with people that were gay, they wouldn't have taken it as a stigma or as a horrible thing. They didn't have any knowledge of, they didn't know that a gay man and a straight man put their pants the same way. And whatever happens in a heterosexual household happens in a homosexual household. You have a life exactly the same as somebody with a straight couple. The same things happen in a homosexual couple. It's no different. Instead of seeing it like this is horrible or this is something that is absolutely, it's going to be absolutely horrible, because they didn't have any knowledge of anybody who was homosexual back then.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even a ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee.